If any of you are looking forward to being crop consultants, obviously you have a bunch of soils consultants here today, so I hope you don't mind. But what I hope we can convey is that with your base knowledge of learning, and I'm sure Dawn will reiterate this when she gets up and talks, you have to take that base knowledge you learn, and as you saw with the last two presentations, apply it to very abstract situations. Many, many times, more often than not. Most of the time you'll have pretty routine things. But learn to think abstractly. Now, as I told Pierre what I have here, I'm sorry, doesn't quite measure up to the mysteries and sexiness of what they were presenting. I do, as I was telling Don, too, I have done soils consulting all the way from remediation of the largest Superfund site in the country through demolition of Air Force bases through crop consulting even, but most of my work in this day and age for the last 5 years has been in stormwater management and urban environments. And really, urban environments is really a cusp that we as soil scientists are really having to dive into because it's kind of like that's not our territory. Well, it is, because it's an area that now is being presented and realized by many professionals like, oh, soil does matter. Vegetation matters. How to grow vegetation matters. And so you have to know how all these pieces connect. So that being said, I'm going to whip through these first few slides because I wasn't really quite clear on the concept of what we were trying to do. But basically, in an urban environment, this is how your typical construction contractor views his management of the soil. Unfortunately, that's what they are giving us to work with. And what they're giving us to work with is basically the most, pardon my terminology, bastardized piece of work you ever want to see. It is sterile. It is down to that sea horizon. It is dense, compacted. You're getting a mess under most situations you have in the urban environment. But what they're starting to find out, and I tell people I have felt like Don Quixote for 30 years, waving my arms about the importance of soil and its place in environmental management and in our modern lexicon, sustainability. Because it is the soils and the vegetation and the water that impact water management, which is probably the critical issue of this century, energy management, and then as you go through that ring of connecting dots, you even get into society and economics. So really, it all comes down to these fundamental things that we're even talking about today. And this is what you can expect to face in whatever career path you would choose along this line. Common soil issues, drastic disturbance. Now, this you're not going to find in a city, but I like it. Topsoil, under most conditions, is almost always stripped and removed and sold back to you for about 5 times the price of what you should normally pay. Of course, normally you shouldn't pay anything. And then they even take the top B horizons and leave you with a C horizon. And I'm still on the hunt for the guy who built my house and did my landscaping because I'd like to do a few bad things to him. Landscapes are almost always drastically altered. If there are hills, they cut the tops of the hills off and fill in the valleys. If it's flat, they create hills and create valleys. There is compaction. No construction contractor, no developer in this world is going to leave a site unless he could leave it to 100% density. Sterile soils, like I talked about. What they're doing is they're taking the life, the very life of that soil that's at the very top, with all that biology and the chemistry and everything that allows plants to grow and grow very well and filters our water and does everything that's good for creating a good, natural, well-balanced environment, and they're leaving us with sterile material. So the question is, how do we step back and help fix this? These, I don't know if I could call them mysteries, but these are some of the challenges I'm going to present. I don't know if we necessarily have to break into groups because I didn't do so good of a job as preparing cases as everybody else. Oh yeah, we have erosion. That always seems to be a little bit of a problem. Every urban condition, not every urban condition, many, many urban conditions, you don't know what you're going to be getting because typically under most urban conditions, even in the suburbs, it's been altered. So your soil survey might say that you might have a Cahola silt loam, as we find in Manhattan, which is so nice. But in reality, it's been so drastically disturbed, you just have a relic of what was there at one time. This is at a site in Dallas. And the Dallas is in the area called the Blackland Prairie. And the people doing this development, they were screaming and yelling that they had nothing but clay to work with and it was going to be a disaster. And I got pulled in after they had made all the plans for this project. And once I started looking at what they had on site, yeah, it's a clay soil, but it is so rich in organic matter, I could form about a 6-inch ribbon doing a finger test in the field, but then it broke apart just like little heads that were perfect. So I ran around for the next 2-3 weeks, even telling the bulldozers, don't screw this material up. We couldn't save enough of it, but just as an indication, we didn't know what was underneath there. They probably could have had enough of that black soil, which was beautiful, which was about 6 feet thick, to really do all their landscape. But the die had already been cast. Our urban soil management challenges, we need to do intense management inputs. We've got to get away from that if we need a sustainable world. The energy required to put fertilizer on our exotic vegetation is ridiculous. Not just in placing it there, but even the manufacture of the fertilizers, as you well know, the transportation of the fertilizers, and of course the chemicals that go with it. And we're using a lot of water. There was a presentation this morning where it was showing that 800 liters per day are used per person, no, 800 liters per person per year just in Phoenix to keep grass alive where it should not even be growing. But that's what we like. The exotic vegetation that we choose to put our environment in most of the time is shallow rooted because it's exotic to most parts of the United States. It'll grow well in the east where they have evenly distributed rainfall. But much of it came from Europe, where they just have constant rainfall. But if you try to do this in the Midwest, we got to pump water. It's imbalanced. And then lastly, the challenge that we have, and I'm just going to keep it at this. One of the great things you will have as you move forward in your career is you need to educate other people about the importance of soils and crops and vegetation in the balance of our urban environments. Okay, our example project, number one to start with, and again, I don't know if we have to break into groups here. Called onto a site about 2 years ago. This is northeast of Kansas City. It's in the Missouri River floodplain. And this warehouse did extensive landscaping, and it kept failing. They were putting hundreds of thousands, if not more than $1 million, into their landscape that continually failed. So finally, they called up, and they said, can you kind of help us out and tell us why it's failing? So we went out and walked at the site. The first indication that they had that what they were worried about is they had a lot of erosion. But you can see from this, and this picture was probably taken about November, so it doesn't do the grass justice, but at the same time, most of the grass was dead or there were invasive weeds. What were the possible reasons? Was it poor fertility? That's usually the first thought that comes to mind, is it doesn't have enough nutrients. Drought conditions, but it was a wet year. Were there too many weeds? There were a lot of weeds. Were there steep slopes? Missouri River floodplain? Don't think so. Potential disease. I think I have a few pictures here to kind of give us some clues. They're not as big as what the other guys had. The first thing I did, looked where they had drainage, where they collected stormwater. That was the extent of their slopes. And again, you can see that the vegetation was not real extensive on there. This is a picture of their erosion. If you could look at that texture, it's dominantly sand. This is a picture of the head cut of one of their erosion gullies. You can see the grasses were trying to grow, but they were having a tough time. And again, this is the first case. It's really simple. No need to get into groups. Hopefully somebody can raise their hand and say, this is a no-brainer. But this is really what kind of gave the clues to indicating what exactly was wrong at this site. So can anybody look at that? Basically what we have, they wanted a planting soil over the sand, as they called it, a planting soil. Basically, probably a silt loam, silty clay loam. Who can tell me what the problem is with something like that, when this is sand and that's silty clay loam? Do you guys remember about your hydraulics in soils? You guys did take souls, right?
Tell us who you studied under.
Steve Teen, yeah. When he was a young man.
Still is a young man.
You know, he is. I like that. So, if you know about the good old Bernoulli jump, and the fact that soil is going to saturate and it's going to fill the pores, and it cannot go into a larger pore below it until it has a degree of saturation and energy that will push it into the larger pore. Then when it gets into the larger pores below, it'll become excessively drained. So even though it was a wet year, what can we say that will probably happen with this soil? I'm sorry? I thought I heard some. How much water holding capacity is probably going to be there for the plants to exist on? God, you guys are so enthusiastic.
Probably about a half an inch of water holding capacity.
Exactly. And in the Kansas summers, which are not too far off of what a Texas summer is like, a half inch of water holding capacity will go about 2 days. So basically, even though we had a wet summer, these grasses, and they put exotic grasses in there, were constantly under drought condition. They didn't have any water. The other part of the equation on this is if you look at this, once any type of little situation or cut in this happens, what's causing the erosion? I am going to break you into groups. We're going to make some really tough assignments. How much do we know about the stability of sand? I'm sorry? Yeah, sand is not very cohesive, and it erodes very, very quickly. And then if you have that topsoil over top of it, it's just going to start cutting away because the topsoil will allow excess water to run over top, hit that sand, and it cuts channels deeper and deeper, quicker and faster. So they had gross erosion. So, okay, I'll walk you through the first example. Oh, there are very few roots, yeah, because basically they're just trying to get whatever water they can out of that silty clay loam, silt loam type material. So in essence, vegetation was under drought conditions all the time. The stability of that field was poor at best. Got to open it up to anybody and everybody because you guys are so enthusiastic. How would you fix this? You can't leave until we get the answer. Yeah. How would you do that? Without throwing another $1 million at it.
How deep is
the sand? The sand is probably about 3 or 4 feet deep. And then it just goes to a finer grade sand.
Was any manure worked in at all?
Nope. So that's a good start.
Native plants.
Native plants is part two. Excellent. What else? And you could get some great native plants that make phenomenal landscape. My personal favorite is little blue stem. But even if they had buffalo grass, that's tough to get going. Anything else? What would you do to that horizon? You bet. Mix up that horizon. I'd have my disc out there and mix that up so at least we have that silty clay loam and we'd take that 6 inches and see if we could get it down 12 to 18 inches and increase that water holding point of that water. Then, if you do mix in compost or manure, you're going to increase that water holding capacity even more. And eventually some of those spines will kind of filter down so that you'll keep increasing the depth of your rooting zone that can be sustained. And then if you're using native plants, they're going to send their roots down deeper. So they will have a more sustainable life. They'll be able to draw the water from deeper down. Remember, this is a river basin, so the water table typically will be reasonably high. So there in of itself, we can stabilize the site by the root action of the plants growing deeper. We could improve the water relationships by mixing that sand and the top planting soil together. And then also, just in doing those, we really don't even need to add any fertilizers. So does that make sense? Seems like whenever I ask a question, I'm always on my phone with a client, I'll explain something, and I hear silence. I go, did that make sense? So, it's a bad phrase I have now. Oh, look at that. I even did this so that all the pictures would get larger, and I forgot about that. I don't know how to use PowerPoint very well. And there's basically the crux of the problem, which we were talking about. And if you do look at that, you can kind of see the grainier texture of the sand below. All right. Yeah, I just explained all this. We can move on. Stormwater, best management practices are a big, big item in urban environments. Right now, I'm going to tell a little bit of a story before we get into this. It's generally the realm of civil engineers. And that scares me. And I have the greatest respect for civil engineers. I work with them. I have to. I work for a consulting firm that is an engineering firm. And the greatest compliment they paid me was when I asked them for some help on something, they just looked at me and they said, "We don't understand what you do." They admitted it, which is something not too many of those guys will do. But I loved it because I could hold it over their head. But stormwater management, basically the EPA in this day and age right now, dictates that for what is called phase two stormwater rules, that communities need to implement these best management practices that involve collecting stormwater and allowing it to infiltrate into the soil, as opposed to collecting it in a storm drain, into a concrete pipe, to the local drainage where it erodes that stream into oblivion. So what we're doing in this day and age is we're trying to create what are called bioretention cells or rain gardens or vegetated swales. We were doing this in Omaha, and the problem is in Omaha for many, and Kansas City too, they have a lot of poorly designed BMPs that kept failing. The challenges they have there, well, basically they're on a silty clay loam soil. It's a basically a olean or a less base soil. So they call it tight clay muck. Well, if they want to call it that, I love it. I think it's beautiful soil. But we need to improve infiltration. Because it's the city, and people like everything to be perfect and pretty in a city, we needed to have both an immediate response for infiltration and a long-term response. So we're looking at both near-term infiltration capacity for these bioretention cells as well as long-term. We need water quality improvement and reduced vegetation management. So now let's break into groups. How many groups do we have, Pam? Four? All right, well, the last one's easy. So this group here, we'll talk about the tight, silty clay soils. This group over here will talk about how we're going to improve infiltration, both for immediate and long-term response. So, okay, you got two right there. Group back there, let's do the water quality improvement. What would be your strategy for water quality improvement? And, yeah, let's do that last one for the group that's back here. What do we do for reduced vegetation management because people don't like to take care of plants? So should we take 10 minutes? Sure. One more time. I'm sorry, I have a habit now of saying, does this make sense?
Eight. What if we got eight? I thought it would be 3 minutes.
All right. That'll be good. Now, if you were to ask soil microbiologists from Arkansas, they know it all.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, these are hopefully pretty simple solutions. Group number one, first off, how are we going to improve our tight, silty clay soils? Spokesman, please. How are you going
to
break it up?
Well, we're talking about tilling it, and it's something just to puncture or aerate it in some fashion just to help break up the surface and use the plants to help increase that.
That's a good start. Is there anything else you think you could do? If you get my bent.
Well, if you're looking to increase...
Think about you've got an urban soil. It's been urban probably for 50 years. It was a farm field once. But under turf grass, you're not going to have a lot of biology.
So, if you're looking to improve the water capacity and the absorption of the water in the soil so that it can filter and incorporate organic matter?
Yes.
Then soil microbes.
Yeah. Just passing commentary, soil microbiology, the fungus, the bacteria, essential for soil function. So think about that whenever you want to improve your soil tilt and soil material, especially if you have a tight clay-based soil. All right, next group. How are we going to improve infiltration, especially with both immediate as well as long-term conditions?
I guess what we came up with was for the immediate, we would apply some type of mulch or compost, maybe mix that in, help water get through that silty clay, and then for long-term,
perfect, except flip it around. Actually, people want to see that immediate response so that the water is going to be able to drain that's been collected. They want to see it drain within 24 hours. So if you have that specially amended soil with a drain pipe underneath it, that'll take care of your immediate before the plants really have a chance to grow and do what they do best. Over the long term, the plants are going to grow and do what they do best, so then you'll be able to have the filtering capacity of the soils, and that water will go down deeper into the soil with the long term. So you guys had the right answer, just a little bit back and forth. Typically what we see, and I'll show a picture in it, there'll be a what I call an infiltration cell, and we're putting in a sand compost mix. That actually drains a little bit too fast, but you'll have a soil in there, an amended soil mix material that goes right to a drain. The water will drain through that. It filters through the organic matter. Yeah, they'll get an organic tea that drains out with it, but it cleanses the soil or the stormwater very, very well. Dang it, we just answered water quality improvement, but give me your answer anyway. Yes. You know, the part that we just talked about, the soils, yeah, that was giving that part of the answer, but what you followed on with, which was really good, is the vegetation is probably the best filter we've got, because they call it a scaffold, and it harbors bacteria then that break down organics, and it also traps metals that are trapped also to sediments. Last question, we got to finish real quick. What are you going to do with the vegetation? Agronomist. All right. You got all the pieces. It's self-sustaining. No, that's actually very good. If you have the native plants in there, they don't need fertilizer. You only mow them once or twice a year, if that. Let me see if I can. You know, there's the picture of that. It doesn't look very big, but it was actually about 120 feet across. That infiltration cell in the middle. Typically on BMPs, they say don't go lower than 12 inches deep. I went 30 inches just because I like to push people's buttons. Plants, native plants. We put in black-eyed Susans. We put in prairie blazing star. We put in little blue stem. We put in big blue stem. And basically, it all grew up to be very nice. And it is and has become a community garden. Not so much that it was intended to be, but the neighbors, and this is a lower middle class neighborhood, which is not like, you know, you have a lot of wealthy people who like to take on fun causes. But the neighbors love this, and they have adopted it as their garden, and they take care of it. So the city, even though they come down and do the mowing, they have to do practically nothing to it.
Great. Well, thank you very much, and...